from WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. To judge by this fall's presidential election, the United States is a little more red than blue these days. But on college campuses, there's a different coloration. Surveys show an overwhelming majority of college professors identify themselves as Democrats, while professors who identify themselves as conservative are few and far between. Now, voices on the right are stepping up their argument that the absence of conservative professors reflects a long-standing bias in academia toward liberal politics. Too many academics, they say, are out of touch with the true political tilt of the country and increasingly with many of their students. It is, they charge, an environment that suppresses debate and discussion, even leads to discrimination against those who hold conservative views. Academic defenders say not so, that it's the quality of thinking that counts, and that some conservatives simply want to intimidate the last great institution they don't control. Tonight on Point, the right cries foul over underrepresentation on college campuses, and the Academy strikes back. You can join the conversation tonight. Are conservatives right to be on the warpath about being underrepresented on college faculties? If the country is half red and half blue, should college campuses be the same? What is really going on in this debate? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Wilmington, North Carolina, is Mike Adams, Associate Professor of Criminal Justice at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, and columnist for townhall.com. He is author of The Ivory Tower of Babel, Confessions of a Conservative Professor. Good evening and welcome, Mike Adams.
Hey, great to be in the show. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you. Thanks for joining us. Also with us tonight from Knoxville, Tennessee, is Donald Lazier, Professor Emeritus of English at California Polytechnic State University and a lecturer at the University of Tennessee. He is author of the forthcoming book, Reading and Writing for Civic Literacy, The Critical Citizen's Guide to Argumentative Rhetoric, and a member of the steering committee of Teachers for a Democratic Culture, an organization of progressive college professors. Good evening and welcome, Donald Lazier.
Thank you. It's nice to be with you.
Wonderful to have you. Thanks for joining us. Also with me in the studio tonight, On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor of the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Good to have you right here, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Hello to our guests.
All right, Mike Adams, you're representing the complaint that's being brought, so let's hear it. What's the problem?
Well, it's interesting. You talked about the balance in terms of Democrats versus Republicans on college campuses. Actually, in my work, that's not a thing that I've been focusing on primarily. I think that discrepancy has probably been present for at least 50 years since William F. Buckley penned God and Man at Yale.
We're not saying it's new tonight. What catches our eye is what looks like a new, I don't know, you tell us, a campaign or effort or focus on a kind of renewed effort to do something about this, even right down to passing an academic bill of rights that would almost legislate the way things get done in terms of balance on campus. Are you part of that wave?
I think there are a number of different things. Some people are out there fighting for a greater balance in terms of political ideology. Other people are focusing on other issues like the rights of student groups. That certainly relates to that issue. Some others are focusing on issues like speech codes. I've been focusing less on that issue of the exact breakdown of Democrats versus Republicans and some of the other examples of political bias that show up in some other programs like college diversity programs and women's centers and things of that nature.
But are you not – I mean, I hear you. We're going to hear a little later in this hour from Ben Shapiro, a young writer just out of UCLA. He's written this book called Brainwashed, How Universities Indoctrinate America's Youth. I read you at townhall.com lavishing him with praise. Can't wait for him to be the next Ann Coulter or Ann Coulter wannabe and just slashing away at what you see as this liberal bias. It doesn't sound so subtle or hard to get at to me. You're unhappy about it.
Oh, I am, yes.
And why?
And why?
What's going on? As a professor in academia, describe the dynamic that's got you worried.
What concerns me is when college administrators pass knowingly unconstitutional speech codes, and they enforce them in an uneven way with an intentional purpose to suppress conservative thought. I'm also concerned about the treatment of student groups on college campuses where willfully ignorant college administrators pretend as if the diversity policies in their student handbooks trump the United States Constitution. Those are issues at the forefront of my battle, which to me are more important than necessarily the issue of how many Democrats versus Republicans are on the faculty.
Is it hard
but
to
they're
be
related?
Is it hard to be a conservative on the American college campus today, in general, on your campus?
It definitely is. But I think it's getting a little bit easier because I think there are support groups out there, legal support groups. I don't mean like safe zones or, you know, in a touchy-feely sense, but there are legal support groups like the Foundation for Individual Rights and Education, who I think are quite frankly making it much easier these days.
Donald Lazier, join us here. You're pushing back on a number of levels in some of what you've written. And just to go straight to the bottom line, you say, and you're referring here to David Horowitz, one of the thinkers and writers who's been pushing for an academic bill of rights, and the Georgia Senate adopted one already earlier this year. There's talk of more of that coming down the pike. But you say, I have little doubt that beneath the pious avowals by conservatives of Horowitz's ilk, lies the cynical intent to unleash the most ignorant forces of the right in hounding liberal academics to death. Is this a bully boy crusade?
In part, it is. The piece of mine that you're quoting from there was a column of mine in the Chronicle of Higher Education last July titled The Contradictions of Cultural Conservatism and the Assault on American Colleges. And it's a long article, and I make a lot of points in it. And I'm not going to have time to sort of summarize all of these points. But it's a very complicated issue, which I suppose is the first thing to say, that the public debates on this issue are invariably oversimplified and one-sided and sensationalistic, and the truth of the facts are often more complex than gets reported in the public on one side or the other.
We are very determined to be none of those things tonight, so we'd like to hear it.
Well, I understand that, but, you know, when Mike Adams or David Horowitz starts listing instances of this happened on such and such campus and that happened on such and such other campuses, my take on that is that in any given case, what they say may be true or may not be true. In a lot of cases, facts get distorted. The sources are not reliable. Accounts are not necessarily reliable. I'm not saying that in any particular case. What I'm saying is that each of these cases has to be carefully and even-handedly researched and studied on an individual basis.
But you are making some broader...
I would hope Mike Adams will agree just on that point, okay? So, there's a basic problem here in getting the facts straight, which we're not going to be able to do on this program.
So but you are making some broader characterizations here about what you feel is under attack. When you say the assault on American colleges, what is it that, in your view, is under assault?
Well, to begin with, the way that this debate has been framed has been a somewhat biased one to begin with. It's being framed in the public media as what are these leftist academics doing on our campuses, rather than being framed on why is there suddenly, not so suddenly, as I've been going on for about the last 15 or 20 years, why is there this concerted right-wing attack on liberal academics and the humanities in general, and to what extent is that itself a politically motivated and slanted phenomenon?
What's your answer to those questions?
That there are obviously clearly organized forces that are closely allied with the Republican Party, and I'm not going to say that about any of the other conservative guests on the program because, again, you have to take everybody's an individual.
And fair enough.
Where they're coming from and what who they're associated with has to be taken on an individual basis. But I hope that Mike Adams and others will agree with me that there are these very powerfully financed and organized groups that are basically branches of the Republican that have targeted liberal academics, especially in the humanities, as the kind of wedge issue that the Republican Party has been specializing in since Newt Gingrich. And there are always these new wedge issues that Republicans use to polarize public opinion, which then can be counted on siding with conservatives, especially in the case of university education, with which the large majority of the public is not terribly familiar and to which they're not terribly sympathetic.
An awful lot of Americans have gone to college. Why would they not be familiar? an awful big number of Americans have gone to college at this point.
The level of media coverage, when you get Rush Limbaugh talk radio people, Ann Coulter's haranguing about these issues, and the kinds of publicity offensives that are put out by organizations like the National Association of Scholars and the American Council of Trustees and of Alumni and Trustees. They're not put out on an academic level. They're put out by public relations. They're engineered by public relations agencies. They're put out for the mass media, for mass media consumption, and with all of the kinds of oversimplifications and one-sidedness that I've mentioned here. And I would hope that that is a problem that responsible conservatives like Mike Adams would acknowledge.
Mike Adams, how about it? Do you see this whole line of attack as the wedge issue, the new Republican wedge issue that Donald Lazier fears is at the heart of it, or something else?
Well, I'm certainly not trying to divide people. When I look at something like the Leadership Lecture Series program that's established at our university that's now in its fifth year, and we've never had a conservative speaker, never had a Republican speaker, and I'm trying to get the first one, I don't consider that to be divisive. And I would suggest that the issues are quite simply very simple and straightforward, and that academics sometimes like to pretend as if they're more complicated than they really are. The Supreme Court, for example, ruled in the year 2000 in Wisconsin versus Southworth that you cannot take student fees from students and distribute them in a way that is not viewpoint neutral. You can't go and establish funds where only liberal speakers are invited. You can't take funds and only support liberal groups and not conservative groups. And when we see things happening like that on college campuses, it's not being divisive to say that we also want to be represented. And usually, in most cases, it's very straightforward and simple legal issue.
Mike Adams, let me ask you, Don Lazier writes that part of what's going on here is a pushback against the whole humanistic heritage of the Renaissance and the Enlightenment, the whole tradition of skeptical questioning of authority and received opinion that's been at the heart of the Western university experience for centuries now. He sees conservatives as trying to clamp down on that rather than to open things up. How do you see it?
Oh, no, I see it quite different. I think a lot of the people who were radicals back in the 1960s on American college campuses, who were doing sit-ins and doing protests on college campuses, later in the 70s became professors, and then the 90s and around the turn of the 21st century, they became college administrators. And now, interestingly, they're not so interested in protest, and they are very much becoming authoritarian in their response to Republican protesters these days. I see quite a bit of hypocrisy in that regard.
Jack Beatty, join our conversation here. So here we've got the great American landscape, and you can slice it many different ways, but it's clear in all the polls, many more professors, at least in certain portions of the university, in the humanities in particular, Democrat than Republican. I don't know what it would be if you looked at engineering schools or business schools. It might be different. It probably would be different. But what's the tension? What's being played out here? Do we have a big problem, or is the problem being trumped up? How do you see it?
I think there's a big intellectual problem. You know, when you read that by 9-1, the faculty of Stanford in the social sciences and the humanities is Democratic, Berkeley, and we read that Harvard and Berkeley faculties were among the largest givers to the Kerry campaign as a group in the country. And you have to ask yourself, well, what must it be like to be a conservative professor or even more important, a conservative student on campus? You know, John Stuart Mill used to say, "Dear God, strengthen my opponent's arguments." And this, as he called it, to avoid what he called the deep slumber of decided opinion. And I just think that there must be a heck of a lot of stultification built into a dominance of one group in the academy. Now, I don't see a conspiracy behind that.
Right.
I mean, I think there's self-selection. Obviously, conservatives don't want to go into a field where they're going to be so lonely and so feel so marginalized.
And not make the money they'd make on Wall Street,
or
you name it.
Doing something else. But I think it's the student who doesn't really get these basic assumptions, that the assumptions are all Democratic or all liberal. I think that's shortchanges the student.
But what about John Lazier, Professor, when he says he's afraid the hounds of hell coming in here and shutting down the kind of right-wing bully boy approach, kicking down the door, bringing in the wedge issue, and shut down a conversation?
No, we don't want that. But why not more conservative speakers? If you can't get them on the faculty, why not bring them in to give lectures? I mean, let some sparks fly so the students won't fall into that deep slumber of decided opinions so young.
Amen for that. Donald Lazier, Mike Adams, Jack, please stand by. We're talking tonight about conservatives crying underrepresentation on America's college campuses. You can join the conversation tonight. Are conservatives right to be on the warpath about the political leanings of America's university faculties? Is American academia a monopoly of liberal true believers that needs to be busted up? Or is this a case of right-wing bully boys coming out to shut down a conversation they just don't like? 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking tonight about conservatives crying in an all-new way about underrepresentation on America's college campuses. It is not a new cry, but it's got a lot of fresh energy behind it. You can join our conversation tonight. What do you think? Do American campuses need affirmative action for conservatives? Are campuses trapped in ideology, or are conservatives trapped in ideology? And are liberals or conservatives more open to the free thinking that American colleges are supposed to pursue? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joined tonight from Wilmington, North Carolina, by Mike Adams, Associate Professor of Criminal Justice at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, and author of The Ivory Tower of Babel. And from Knoxville, Tennessee, by Donald Lazier, Professor Emeritus of English at California Polytechnic State University, lecturer at the University of Tennessee. Donald Lazier, I heard you wanting to respond there just before the break. Jack Beatty was talking about John Stuart Mill's warning against the deep slumber of decided opinion. Do American campuses have a case of that?
Well, I wanted to ask Mr. Beatty about this study that he was citing about the political party affiliation of faculties at Berkeley and Stanford.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, Mr. Beatty, what departments were those faculties in that were studied? Were they in the humanities? Were they in engineering? Were they in computer science? Were they in business?
I think, Jack, you were saying humanities and social science.
I think
why did they single out those subjects rather than studying the more prominent and more influential business-oriented fields? Plus, the Bay Area, Stanford and Berkeley, majority of faculty are liberal and Democrats. Surprise! The Bay Area just happens to be the most liberal area of the country. Why didn't they take their study 200 miles down the coastline to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo, where I taught, and where the makeup of the faculty is the reverse in terms of Democrats versus Republicans, because the faculty is dominated by computer science and business and agriculture and engineering?
Donald, are you questioning
these studies are skewed?
Are you questioning then the whole premise here? Are you saying no?
Yes.
American academic faculties do not have a Democrat Party or a liberal bias?
The Democratic Party is beside the point. The liberal bias, look, it's beside the point because most of the people that I know, most of the academic leftists that I know, do not consider themselves Democrats. They are fairly critical of the Democratic Party. But be that as it may, again, the issue is just being framed in a one-sided way. You're looking at only at liberal bias, as though only liberal bias exists.
Mm-hmm.
In my article in the Chronicle of Higher Education, I listed 20 or so aspects in which American education and universities have conservative biases. Now, it isn't one or the other.
Give us an example.
It's an oversimplification. It would be an oversimplification to say there's domination by one side or the other. There are opposing forces throughout every element of the university, as there is throughout American education. Okay, for starters, first of all, you've got the whole side of faculty and administration and trustees that represent corporations, that represent corporate capitalism. The university itself is a bastion of corporate capitalism as an employer, as a landlord, as an investor of endowments,
right.
as a consumer of proper, as a property owner, as a consumer of construction and equipment. It's a huge boon. The money, the millions of dollars that universities pay are a huge boon to corporate America.
So plenty of built-in conservative leanings there.
Universities are in the service of research and consulting for corporations. You got all these. I'd like to hear your guy from the Harvard Law School talk about the service the Harvard Law School does to corporate law for corporate law firms.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't. Those things just don't factor into the equation. Plus, when it comes to students, most students are not really concerned about getting a liberal education in most universities, as it may be different in the Boston area, but in the public universities where I've taught for the past 30 years, they see university high school and university education as job training. They could care less about the humanities, and they are quite – they come to college and they get out of college quite ignorant about politics, quite illiterate about politics and about world events. All they want is to get a job. So you could have liberal faculties hammering them over the head every minute of every class that they're in, and it would count very, it would make very little impression on most students who are single-mindedly concerned with getting the job and catering their views to conservative corporate employers in order to get jobs and to keep jobs.
So it's not why they came in the first place, you say, and there's a conservative framework maybe baked in the cake there. I want to get another conservative voice in here joining us from New York tonight. Carol Swain is with us. She's professor of law and political science at Vanderbilt University. This year, a visiting fellow at Princeton University, author of Black Faces, Black Interests, and the New White Nationalism in America. She's been a guest with us before. Carol Swain, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you.
So there you are in Princeton this year, typically at Vanderbilt, a very public conservative. What's it like in your experience to be a conservative academic faculty member in American culture 2004?
Well, first of all, I don't consider myself a conservative. I've been most of my career pretty independent in my political views.
Okay.
Nonetheless, I was quickly labeled as a conservative, and I believe that because of that, you know, that my career has suffered in some ways.
Is this because of your opposition to affirmative action?
No, early on, I questioned the wisdom of drawing majority black legislative districts because it could be seen that it would help elect Republicans. And so my first book, Black Faces, Black Interests, that was published in 1993,
right.
I argued that political party was more important than the race of the representative as long as blacks held the views they did, that best be represented by Democrats. Consequently, it was not wise to draw legislative districts that would end up electing more Republicans.
And you
so
said you think
that got me labeled as a conservative.
And you said you think your career has suffered as a result. How?
Oh, I mean, in numerous ways. I believe that as a black faculty member, if you are not accepted by the Black Studies program as a woman, by the Women's Studies program, if they don't put the seal of approval on you, then you have limited value to universities because they want you as a scholar, but they also want someone that can appeal to various constituency groups. And if you're not accepted by your logical constituency groups, then you are of less value to the institution.
How do you think this might be addressed, Carol Swain, that there's been some kind of vague suggestion of legislative action, almost kind of affirmative action of redress here, to change the balance?
I don't think that's necessary. I believe that, you know, certainly this year, in recent years, there's been more publicity addressed to the problem. And so I think that just making it known to the wider public, that is very useful. And another thing that I believe is changing the calculus is the fact that many of the liberal theories, the political theories, they're not working so well, and I believe that more institutions will see the value of having divergent voices, ideological voices, to help explain some of what's going on in the rest of America.
Carol Swain, it's always great hearing from you. I know we've got to let you go tonight, but thanks for joining us for a couple of minutes
here. Thank you. Bye.
Carol Swain, this year at Princeton, typically at Vanderbilt, and always good to have her. Robert's calling right now from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Hi, Robert. You're on the air. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm a conservative on campus here at North Carolina.
Okay.
And I'm in the liberal arts studies area. And I think on campus, there's not a lot of discrimination towards conservatives. In fact, I mean, I don't really see anything on a day-to-day basis in terms of on campus, like going around. But in the classroom, sometimes in class discussion, professors don't realize that, like, to speak up against them, it's, you know, students are very intimidated to do that. And a lot of times we'll just end up going with whatever the professor says just to get out of there and not have to have any sort of confrontation or anything.
And in your experience, Robert, at North Carolina, does it feel as though you're seeing a liberal leaning in those classrooms, or is it more diverse than that?
No, I mean, it's pretty – I mean, the professors are pretty liberal and will espouse their liberal views. students, on the other hand, I mean, a lot of us are a little bit more conservative, but it's like that professor. If you're conservative, you're accused of selling out to the corporate interests just because we're not taking over, you know, campus buildings with guns.
Got it.
We're concerned with getting jobs.
Well, we got it, Robert, and thanks for your call. Thanks very much, Mike Adams. Is it a lonely experience for conservatives on American college campuses today, or given the kind of changing complexion of national politics, are they feeling more comfortable just in presumably the greater numbers?
Well, I think that they will feel more comfortable in the future, but I think he's really right about Chapel Hill. I think that what you have in the college classroom going on, you do have a lot of bias going on in the classroom. That's really one of the main forms of discrimination. Also at UNC Chapel Hill, the treatment of some of the student groups. Those are a couple of the main issues which I think need to be remedied, not necessarily by affirmative action, to be honest with you. I think at UNC Chapel Hill, UNC Chapel Hill needs a couple of lawsuits to solve some of the problems they're having up there.
What about in business courses? Isn't it conceivable that liberal students are discriminated against in business-oriented courses?
Well, it's interesting. You talked about some of those studies being skewed because they looked at Stanford and some of the other universities out there on the left coast. But if you look at UNC Wilmington, I was a couple of years ago doing a study and looking up the political affiliations in different departments. And I did go beyond the humanities. You know, we started in English and found, for example, at the time I was looking at it, there were 31 professors, all of them Democrats in that department. But we found in the business school that there were still more Democrats than Republicans, but a much better balance.
Do you want affirmative action for the right on campuses, Mike Adams?
Absolutely not. But I will say one thing, though. The other professor did mention something about administrators and members of the Board of Trustees.
Mm-hmm.
Here in North Carolina, most overwhelmingly members of the Boards of Trustees are, in fact, Democrats. And I know our chancellor and all seven of our vice chancellors are all Democrats. So we have a skew basically everywhere on our campus, but it just varies.
Why do you think that is? I mean, if the interests of trustees and administrators are basically business-oriented, corporate-oriented, which I hope you will acknowledge, then why do you think there is that skew there rather than a Republican skew, which you would expect from corporate executive types?
Oh, that's easy. We've had about, four Democratic governors in a row. The Democrats appointed them.
Donald Lazier, let me ask you. You make the argument in the Chronicle of Higher Education that what's really going on here is not a battle between right and left, but a battle between simplification and complexity, between scholars who are prepared to take up the genuine complexity of issues and what you describe on the conservative side as a tendency to simplify, to dumb down. That'd be my phrase, but it seems to be to me what you're saying here. Is that what's really afoot here? Is it not liberal right versus left, but complexity versus oversimplification?
Yeah, and I would hope to hear Mike or others respond on this point about just the basic political naivete and lack of basic knowledge on the part of many students, at least in the universities where I've taught, which are overwhelmingly conservative. Students come to college and they get through college knowing very little of history, of political science, of geography, and you can't really engage them in political argument, say, you know, on a fairly sophisticated, on this level that we're talking about now of liberal ideology versus conservative ideology, because many of them are simply clueless about what those terms mean. And all they know about politics or geography or the Iraq War basically is what they've gotten from their parents and from the mass media, which are, you know, sources of information where everything is sound bites and reduced to the lowest possible dimension. And I would submit that a lot of conservative rhetoric, including what David Horowitz recommends to conservative politicians, is aimed precisely at that level of ignorance and gullibility and oversimplifications of things. That is not to say that there aren't highly intelligent, intellectual, scholarly conservatives. But in my experience, I teach a mix of both, and my textbook that's coming out now presents a mix of liberal and conservative readings on a fairly sophisticated level of writing and of thinking. But the basic, you know, the prior problem really is that a lot of students simply aren't capable of dealing with sophisticated political ideas or historical knowledge at all, and as a consequence, they are more likely to side with conservative simplicities and the dominant social conservatism and the tendency just to go along with those in authority.
And you describe an exploitation of that as a kind of deliberate strategy from the conservative side. You quote David Horowitz from his 2000, The Art of Political War, with the advice, when you speak, do not forget that a soundbite is all you have. Therefore, it's absolutely essential to focus your message and repeat it over and over again, not the traditional message of academia, but there's one message. Mike Adams, I want to get your response in just a moment. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Mike, there's the charge that there's a kind of oversimplification in many or undereducation that many students come to college, some leave college with, and that conservatives are ready to exploit rather than address that. What do you say?
Well, you know, what we heard is just the sort of academic arrogance, I think, that has the left in trouble these days. I mean, if I were to say to you on your show tonight that I know some black people who are really smart, you would consider me a racist, wouldn't you? I would hope you'd consider me to be a racist. And that's what I just heard from my opponent. You know, I know a few conservatives that are really smart, but, you know, most of them oversimplify things. It's just the old argument that the left has been using for the last half century, which is that conservatives are stupid. And it's growing quite old, and people are beginning to see through it.
Jack B.
Is it untrue that conservative politicians like George Bush oversimplify issues and talk down to their audiences or not?
Oh, I don't see a difference in terms of politicians between the left and the right in that regard, not at all. Mm-mm.
Jack Beatty, jump in here with us. You see that this kind of debate that's emerging on the one hand, you know, and we get kind of down to the gut level here. The liberal voice saying you are oversimplifying irresponsibly for scholars. And the conservative voice saying, come off it. Let's deal with America as it is and not look down our noses at it.
Yeah, I think that this sort of debate has been going on a long time. But I think Professor Lazier is telling us something very important, what I was saying earlier, citing Stanford, Berkeley, Harvard, had to do with elite campuses. But that down where most Americans go to school, they are going to school to get jobs. It is a vocational training they're getting.
And therefore?
Well, they come to school with the uninflected sort of surround from this culture, you know, whatever that might be. I mean, is it conservative? Is it liberal? I don't know what to define. But they haven't really framed ideas about the world at all. And he's telling us they don't even get that in the schools, that it's a conservatism only in the sense that people have views, the basis of which they can't explain. They have views because they have views. They don't say, I believe this because I feel it in my heart. That's the uninflected, unintellectual, unquestioning, natural person, if you will. That shouldn't be a university graduate. And yet he's telling us that this is the kind of people who such an education is. The education is such that that students are going through college, are coming in that way, and are going out that way.
And Don Lazier, are you charging then that conservatives, even academics, with the requirements of thinking that suggests, are satisfied to just go with the flow on that? In fact, they want to exploit that? Is that exactly what you're saying?
I'm not saying academic conservatives do or intellectual conservatives do. Like, I try to get my students to read The Nation, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal, and Weekly Standard to get a balance of liberal versus conservative views on an intellectual level. They can't understand those journals, whether they're liberal ones or conservative ones. Well, that's the problem as I see it.
There's maybe another problem altogether, but maybe hooked right in here as well. Mike Adams, Donald Lazier, Jack, please stand by. We've got to take a short break. We're talking tonight about conservatives crying underrepresentation on American college campuses. You can join this conversation. If America is half red and half blue, does it follow that campus faculties should be the same? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about American conservatives crying underrepresentation on American college campuses. You can join the conversation tonight. Is American academia a monopoly of liberal true believers that needs to be busted up? If America is half red and half blue, does it follow that campus faculties should be the same? And would conservative inroads on the U.S. campus enliven academic exchange or shut it down. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joined tonight by Mike Adams, Associate Professor of Criminal Justice at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, and Donald Lazier, Professor Emeritus of English at California State Polytechnic State University, and a lecturer now at University of Tennessee. Right now, we're joined by Joseph calling from Greensboro, North Carolina. Hi, Joseph. You're on the air.
Hi. My name's Joe, and I'm the editor on the UNC Greensboro newspaper, the Carolinian.
Good to have you, Joe. What's on your mind? What do you think?
Well, I've been listening to the conversation for a little while, and I agree with a lot that's being said by both sides. But the way that I see it on our campus, it's really conservatives being left out is, to some degree at least, a matter of self-selective discrimination.
And are you talking faculty or students there, Joe?
Both. Both. For instance, in the last presidential election, several departments on campus, sociology, political science, put together debates whereby students and faculty of different political viewpoints or who were representing political groups on campus could come together and have like a constructive debate.
That sounds good.
About the issues. And our College Republican group didn't send a representative. They refused to send a representative.
Why? Because they thought the whole event was so hopelessly prejudiced that they wouldn't succeed, or why?
Well, that's what friends of mine who are Republicans say. Yeah, and it's pretty pervasive all over campus. I mean, if we have days where professors are going to all give answers to students about specific issues, the Iraq War, all of these things, it's hard to get conservative professors to even come because they just assume that, you know, it's going to be there's going to be a liberal bias, even if it's put on by the university, even if it's put on by student groups. It doesn't matter. And the students are the same way. We find on our campus, and my friends who are Republicans are proud of this, and will say this themselves.
Joe, you raise an important picture for us there. Thanks very much for giving us that. Mike Adams, how about it? Are conservatives, I don't know how to describe it, but are they ghettoizing themselves on American campuses? Do they feel that ostracized?
Oh, I was very surprised to hear that from Joe, because we have, over the last few years on our campus, we've organized a number of debates. We've tried to with the College Republicans, also with the pro-life group, and on every occasion, the Democrats haven't shown up. So maybe that's just a quirk of that campus. I'm not sure. But there is something to what Joe was saying when it comes to the issue of the composition of the faculty with regards to political orientation. Certainly, I think Democrats are more attracted to the field. I would certainly say that. And that's one of the reasons why you don't hear me talking about affirmative action and things like that on the basis of political affiliation for faculty as much as these other issues I've delineated.
Though it's that cry of underrepresentation has got some people characterizing this call that way. Mike Adams, Don Lazier, stand by. I want to welcome to our conversation right now from Cambridge, Massachusetts, Ben Shapiro, out of UCLA, now a student at Harvard Law School, author of the national bestseller Brainwashed, How Universities Indoctrinate America's Youth. Ben Shapiro, thanks for joining us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So here we are, Mike Adams, a fellow conservative, celebrating you as a would-be Ann Coulter. Are those the high-heeled shoes you want to step into, Ben?
Well, you know, I'm friends with Ann, and I appreciate her writing style. I would think that if I could imitate any columnist, I'd prefer Charles Krauthammer.
And what's the point that you're making? I guess it's pretty clear from the title, Brainwashed, but you've just come through this American undergraduate experience as a conservative, and you found what?
I found that the teaching of liberalism is incessant, whether it's from the professoriate or whether it's from the other students or whether it's from the student groups, student government. It really does pervade all aspects of campus life. And I think that, as Professor Adams was saying before, I'm not sure that it needs to be rectified by some sort of affirmative action group for professors. I think all that I recommend is that professors who are liberal at least take the time to present the conservative opinion instead of immediately deriding it as stupid, which is something that I found very insulting when I was in a number of classes at UCLA. Even at Harvard Law, I'm constantly shocked at the amount of just incredible bias I see in the professoriate in terms of teaching judicial activism versus strict constructionism in terms of constitutionalism. I mean, the idea that that strict constructionism should not be taught in certain law schools, I think, on the basis of stupidity, I think it's just erroneous. I mean, are you going to call Robert Bork an idiot? Are you going to call Richard Epstein an idiot? I mean, I think that it's just as erroneous to exclude things like strict constructionism from the teaching of law as it is to exclude conservatism from teaching of politics at universities.
Ben, let me ask you then, are you bringing the kind of Fox News mantra, or would you like to see that brought to academia, fair and balanced? But, of course, within press circles, that's often criticized for saying, well, you just draw a midpoint between two poles, whether the two poles both make sense or not. What exactly are you suggesting?
All I'm asking is for open debate. I do believe in a sort of Fox News counter to the CNN that currently exists on college campuses. Whether people like Fox News or not, all I'm asking for is balance, and if they feel Fox is unbalanced, then perhaps they should use a different model. All I'm saying is that even a liberal professor can present a conservative opinion with at least a bit of honesty. I mean, if you're a good conservative, you should be intelligent enough to present a good liberal opinion. I feel that if you asked me on the spur of the moment to present a well-reasoned liberal opinion, I could probably do it. I just disagree with it. I think that it's rather insulting for liberal professors to refuse to present conservative arguments, claiming that it's a waste of class time or that it's simply ridiculous.
Ben Shapiro, syndicated columnist, author of Brainwashed. Thanks a lot for being with us, Ben.
Oh, thank you very much.
Donald Lazier, there's the charge. Just make both cases, please. You've been in the field, in the vineyards. How do you respond?
Well, first of all, I'm sort of shocked to hear a student at Harvard Law School praising Ann Coulter as a responsible conservative. I mean, you know, there are responsible conservatives. You mentioned Charles Krauthammer, William Kristol. There's any number of responsible, respectable conservatives.
Well, and he did put his preference for Krauthammer above Ann Coulter.
But he says he admires Ann Coulter. She is a reckless, unscrupulous demagogue who simply lies through her teeth. I mean, read Al Franken's research.
Oh, we've had her right on the air. We've heard her loud and clear.
Ann Coulter's books, they're just total garbage. And so, this is not condescension or arrogance. Quickly. The woman doesn't get her facts straight. But Rush Limbaugh can't get a fact straight.
Yeah, but
can
let's.
You
I want to get
and name one?
No, Mike. I think Professor Lazier is fully settled enough for our conversation. But my question here is whether your core complaint there is that you see the conservative academic crowd as drifting away from the sort of essential requirements of academic conversation. Are you saying that they are not equally committed to a fully considered debate? I mean, Ben Shapiro also cited some fairly weighty legal scholars that he'd like to see represented. They're not Ann Coulters. Don Lazier?
What? Yeah. Well, he just said name an example. In my article, I give a couple of examples from Rush Limbaugh, totally distorting American history. Read Al Franken's book. I don't have it with me.
Hang on, Mike. I don't go in for that cite me a fact on the air in the time. I think that's very often. No, I'm going to let you have your say, and I want to hear it, but I think that's often doesn't get to the core question, and I just want to hear Don Lazier's response.
Okay, just one instance of Rush Limbaugh, who just can't get anything right.
Why are you allowing him to answer a different question? Hold on a second.
I said to give a fact from a distortion from
Ann Coulter.
And I said we're not going to play that game, and we're
right,
not.
But you're allowing him to do it.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are.
No, excuse me. I'm not. But
yes,
I would
I
like to hear.
Pick a fact from Ann Coulter, who you accuse to be a liar. He says, well, here's a fact from Rush Limbaugh.
I don't want to hear even the fact from Rush Limbaugh. But what I would like to hear, Don Lazier, is what you describe as what your students are bringing into your classroom, and you cite Rush Limbaugh on that front.
Yeah, students cite Rush Limbaugh as a responsible source. I ask them to research Rush Limbaugh's books, and they find out in a couple of weeks that he's full of hot air.
So, Mike Adams, let me put it to you then. Do you see, I don't know, Ann Coulter, Rush Limbaugh, these aren't the people that Ben Shapiro is really citing here, but do you see them as appropriate reference points in the academic conversation for your students, or do you see them as Donald Lazier describes them, a kind of as lowering the quality of a conversation and too often interjected by students from the right?
Well, no, I think that his point in bringing up the issue of Ann Coulter was to damage Ben Shapiro's credibility and say, I'm surprised that it would even be mentioned on the air by a Harvard law student who said something about bringing him into the curriculum. The conversation's getting quite confused right now.
He said he respected her.
Yeah. And so your point in bringing it up was to suggest that somehow Ben doesn't have credibility because, you know, no Harvard law student should respect Ann Coulter. Not talking about bringing her into the curriculum, but you go off on this tangent saying everything she writes is garbage and she's a liar. And see, you're the typical left-wing academic that says a person is a liar and they write garbage, and you can't come up with one example. I think you need to be challenged.
Let's hold it there. Jack Beatty, this conversation gets ugly in a hurry. It's astonishing.
Yeah, and I think Ben made a really important point. Okay, let's let's stipulate conservatives are not apt to flock to academia for all kinds of reasons. So given that there are lots of Democrats and liberals there, what should they do? And he said, be an honest broker. Present both sides. I interviewed a professor out at Stanford, Paul Romer, who I think will win a Nobel Prize in economics one of these days. And he said, what are my politics? I said, I haven't got an idea. He said, no, and neither do my students. At the end of the year, I asked them, what are my politics? And they say, we don't know. And he said, that's what it should be like for every professor. Our job should be to point to realities. And when people leave out certain realities, point to the ones they leave out. And present the world as opposed to, you know, a point of view, to be truly objective. And so I think that that Ben really makes a good point there. There's no reason why to be a truly liberal professor, it seems to me, is to be somebody aware that everything has another side.
Challenge minds from right across the political spectrum. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Peter's calling from Warren, Rhode Island. Hi, Peter. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a graduate student in history, and I've taught many courses in American history. And I should say, the first challenge of any classroom teacher is to create a safe space for all possible viewpoints that happen to come up in the class. But the point that I wanted to make is that I think that the so-called liberal academics, of whom I know many, are given, I think, way too much power in this particular debate. The students who come to my classes come in with particular viewpoints, and I'd say 99% of the time leave with those same viewpoints. If they come in neoconservative or libertarian or left-wing, that's what they leave.
So where's the power that the professor holds that you refer to, Peter?
Well, I think that I want to agree with the point that was just made, is that the power of the professor is hopefully to create a safe space and to present as many possible viewpoints that directly bring to bear on the material. If we're studying, say, the Great Depression, I mean, it's completely appropriate to give the perspective of FDR's New Deal, the perspective of the conservatives who opposed it, and to create the cultural, political, social, economic context that history happens in. But I should say that my students, though, come in with all sorts of viewpoints, and like I say, they leave with them. I signed a book once that has an epigraph by Karl Marx in it. And this is this book has won, you know, top prizes in American history.
Yeah.
And the students came in, and they seemed as if they figured out that the point of the assignment was to disregard everything the author said because they discovered that he was reading Karl Marx. And that was so striking to me because that wasn't, of course, the point of reading the book. But
that was enough for them to write it off. Peter, thanks so much for your call. Mike Adams, where does this conversation in academia end up? Can we get to a more balanced position here? Does it have to be kind of all-out warfare? Don't the traditions of the university itself suggest a kind of balance?
Well, yes. I simply can't understand all the objections coming from the left towards trying to strike a greater balance on college campuses. You know, every single time that I get involved with a group that's having a problem on a campus or I get involved in a certain issue, the first thing I tell the person or the group is, if you're interested in expanding the marketplace of ideas, I'll work with you. But if you want to detract from it, I won't. And I'm perplexed when I see cases like what's going on at UNC Chapel Hill right now with an effort to establish a center for the study of Western civilization, a group, the Pope Center for Higher Education, has come along wanting to fund the entire thing. It'll cost the university nothing, and the leftists on the faculty will not allow it to be established when all they want to do is add to the marketplace of ideas.
Don Lazier, we've just got half a minute left. How do you feel the wind blowing? Is it against your kind of fundamental position here? Do you see the
seems to be on this program, doesn't it?
Well, do you see the leverage coming down against the view that you're representing? Do you see?
Yeah, I do. I see a lot of pressure there. And if I could just very briefly make a really central point, there's been the implication here that there should be 50-50 balance, or that the balance in the humanities should equal that in the electorate. No, that's not what the humanities are about. It seems to me you can defend the case that the humanities exist to oppose the mainstream of society, to present viewpoints that students don't get and that citizens don't get anywhere else but in the humanities. And there's a long, long tradition from Socrates to Jesus Christ to Thomas Jefferson,
indeed,
to your good Bostonians, Emerson and Thoreau, of standing up against the majority.
So hold up that flame, says Donald Lazier. Professor Lazier, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Professor Lazier, lecturer at University of Tennessee, and Mike Adams, author of The Ivory Tower of Babel at University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
Jack Beatty, we're out of time. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.